Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
All right, a very special Wednesday Night Rugby with us as ever in studio. We've got Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times, but also on the line tonight we've got Gordon Darcy. Gordon, how you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. I'd say a little bit of jazz accompaniment in the background there.
Is that me or you?
Definitely on our side. Gerry, how are you getting on? What is your level of excitement, stroke, fear about this French team coming to Dublin this weekend?
Bit of both, actually. I think a lot of people have been surprisingly down on the French so far in this tournament and what's been happening in the last year. If you watch closely, this time a year ago, they beat Ireland with a team very much in the first stages of the Guinovez era. Since then, he's tried out a lot of different players and has finally hit upon a very settled team. I would say up to maybe 13 of the starting team will be playing their third Six Nations game in a row. This is most un-French, probably not since the Bernard Laporte days. So they're a settled side. They know each other well. They're building combinations. They're well rested. They've had a week in Nice. They didn't play in the top 14 last week, which is also a new development, as they didn't the week before the tournament. This is not Bernard Laporte's been given a lot of credit for this. It's actually an outgoing gift from Pierre Camus, the previous president of the French Federation, that Laporte replaced. So they're more settled. They're better. They're more rested. And I think if you look at their form guide, in the three games up to beating Scotland, they played the top three teams in the world, New Zealand, England and Australia. And they were all one-score games, which they could have won. They came close to winning them. I think there was an element of fatigue in their performance against Scotland, which hasn't been factored in. My French sources tell me it took them like 4 days to recover from the English game. They hardly had any prep for the Scottish game. This time is different. They haven't played for their top 14 clubs in the middle, in between the second and third rounds. They've been rested, as I said. I think they'll be much better primed in that respect. I think they know what they're doing. I think their spacing is better in defence. Their work rate is better in defence. They're harder to break down than the defensive rabble they were when they started out last year in the Six Nations. I think their attacking games come on. They've got ploys that are very distinguishable now in the team, like looking, like as Bernard Jackman was telling me last week, using pick-and-molls through the middle of the maul and coming off and attacking the scrum half. Very effective way of using pick-and-molls. And I looked at that Scottish game again closely, and I thought that they've really hit on somebody in Baptiste Sarand, their scrum half. I think he's a better scrum half than Machinot. I think he's the best scrum half I've seen out of France in quite some time. He seems to really understand the game plan, maintains a very high tempo, very accurate, good basics. Is a bit of a threat, although we haven't seen much of it. And most of all, I think, although I bow to Ronan O'Gara's knowledge in this, he kind of was very dismissive of Camille Lopez at halftime in the analysis of that game. Lopez, I think, has kicked 10 out of 12, even though he's not the first choice kicker for Clermont. He landed clutch kicks in Twickenham. He landed clutch kicks to win the game in Scotland. And most of all, I looked at the try they scored against Scotland over and over again. And it started from a turnover in the outside channels. And Vakatawa, who I hear might be injured, which I think is a pity because defensively he was so flawed for both Scottish tries, came in off his wing, called for the pop pass off the ground from Gourdon, the new number 7 they've discovered from La Rochelle, a 27-year-old. I don't know how he missed the cut up until now, but he looks a real pacey number 7, a good player. And 7 transfers or offloads or tip-on passes later, Gael Fico was making a break up the right-hand side. Very French, very alert off turnovers, very much like the old French. And 18 phases later, Fico scored in the corner with Lopez having had 10 involvements,
yeah,
right up on the gain line. And I think Lopez is the best out-half I've seen in France in quite some time, certainly better than Jules Plisson or François Trandon-Duc, who didn't have much of a kicking game, and certainly better than Jean-Marc Doucin, who left Ireland off the hook 3 years ago in Paris. So I think this is there's a very real French threat that if Ireland aren't on the game, they could lose, much like Murrayfield. Not that I don't think Ireland won't be on their game, but I think there's a threat here.
Yeah, it seems, Gordon, that this is a French team who are making giant strides quite quickly, that over the last number of years, because of the way that the top 14 was scheduled, they just didn't take this seriously. They couldn't really be anything other than a rabble, and now they are no longer a rabble.
Yeah, I don't think it's as simplistic as that, to be honest. I think and Gerry's probably alluded to it there, that the outgoing president knew that there was a problem. And you can see that the French Union are starting to make inroads into that the top team has to be the French team. It has to be the French national team. And they're trying to filter down from there, and they're trying to take the players out of the top 14 during the Six Nations. They need their international team to be playing well. And then on top of that, there's the they're trying to get more French players playing in the top 14, and that's going to take a while. You know, when you don't have the national sporting body looking after the domestic teams, you know, there's a conflict of interest right from the go. But they are probably better positioned, say, than the English are to get that sorted. So it's just an interesting time in French rugby at the moment. Like, I think they have the best coach there, and I think that's really, really important, because we see how important the coaching ticket is. We just look at South African rugby at the moment, and largely it's the same group of players being coached poorly, and, you know, they get beaten by Italy, they get beaten by Japan. It just, and the importance of it, and you see England with the importance of having Eddie Jones as the coach, as in the Irish example here with Joe, how important the coaching ticket is. And Gino Vez, it takes time to influence change, and we can definitely see that in the French philosophy and the way they're playing it. They're just not going for the overhaul straight away. They're kind of going, okay, we still need to win games, but let's try and rediscover it on the journey of trying to get back to where we want to be as one of the top three or four nations in world rugby.
You were talking today in your column about the strength of the back row as well. What is it about the way they're playing at the moment that's impressed you?
Just the combinations, and I think it's really unfortunate, because the Irish guys set such high standards, and while they're playing really, really well individually, that real dynamism between the three of them only really came out in the last 15, 20 minutes against Italy. But that for me is a huge positive, because we're going to see that hopefully in the Aviva at the weekend. But just the French back row, there seems to be just as Jerry was talking about the number 7
Gordon.
not my namesake, but reasonably close. That him and Picamol just seem to have a really, really good understanding together. And when you have a 6 or 7, and like you go back and you look at the David Wallace, David and the Leaney, or the Jamie Heathcote, that kind of dynamic between a 6, 7, and 8, it really can be really, really powerful when players are going through. And the French thing is about the offload, and once you have a player like Picamol who can just, you know, inch out a little hole in the defence and create the offload. Like, I spent most of my career marking Jojian and trying to stop the guy offloading. You know, he was nearly a foot taller than me. That's kind of what the pick-and-mold kind of guy is. He's kind of going through that gap, has the ball ready for it, and this guy is ready for it. And they just seem to have hit that dynamic really, really well. But the Irish back row is, you know, is more than capable of dealing with these guys. But it's just a case of, there's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts around this game.
Yeah, I guess one of the primary ifs, ands, and buts from an Irish perspective is that we haven't yet seen the team reach its peak, Jerry. We haven't seen them perform at the level we know they're capable of performing.
In the Six Nations, you think?
Yes.
Well, I think they perform very, very well in Rome, but you have to factor in the opposition. I still think they perform very well.
Yeah, I guess
they're very clinical.
Yeah, I guess though the Scotland game is still, there's just so
I think
long.
That's what's going to drive them, Jerry. To be honest, I think the memory of that Scottish game is going to gnaw at them for the rest of this tournament and sustain them all the way to the end. You know, Declan Kidney always said you learn more from your defeats than your wins, and it's so true, and it's true in life, true in sport. And I think it's still gnawing at them, and I think that you will see a much more intense start right from the kickoff, really setting the tempo right from the start, very, very much more, way more accurate. Nothing like as narrow in attack or as narrow in defence they were that day, particularly with Johnny Sexton back, bringing players in, taking the ball to the gain line, getting their rumblers going.
Is Sexton
the accuracy
fit? Is he fit? I don't like.
We're told he is, that he trained fully on Tuesday. If so, he plays, no question.
Yeah, sure about the no question, but like we've heard. Players have trained and then suddenly.
Sure. The proof will be in the pudding tomorrow.
The captain's run disappears, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that he's going to start. He's going to play. Yeah.
Okay. And any other significant changes? Rob Kearney's come through as well?
Apparently so, which is a bit of a surprise considering the vibes that were coming out of the camp last week, but apparently so. You've got a choice there between Jack McGrath and Keane Healy as ever. You know, the rationale after choosing Keane Healy for the Rome game was that Joe said he was going to give them both 50 and 30. You know, if one starts 50, the other comes off the bench 30 and rotate them. Now it's back to an even keel. I would imagine Jack McGrath might start, because I think you get more out of Keane Healy as an impact off the bench than you do off Jack McGrath. I also think that, you know, you want to start with a really strong scrummaging effort as well. So I'd imagine Jack McGrath might come in. And like I said, Johnny Sexton will come in as well, and Rory Best obviously will come back as well. They'll be the three changes you'd imagine to the starting team. And the squad, it's in very rude health at the moment. It's a healthier squad in terms of its injury profile. It's been since the French game of the World Cup, and we all saw the carnage that happened after that, and we remember the carnage that happened to Scots after the France Scotland game as well, losing Greg Laidlaw and Josh Stress the rest of the tournament, having four HIAs during the course of the match. I would say that, you know, it'll be a brutally tough game physically, and we're going to need the bench, but you could have Ian Henderson, Peter Manny, Andrew Trimble all back in the bench as well, so it'll be a strong bench.
Yeah, Gordon, Jerry mentioned there the narrowness in attack and the narrowness in defence. This narrow defence has been an issue that we've been hearing about since that Argentina game in particular in the World Cup. Is there an issue with that? What's your assessment of why we ended up so narrow against Scotland?
Okay, a couple of things. We're going to go forward. Okay, so the Irish team is currently judged off beating New Zealand in Chicago because that was the pinnacle of where they were. And then they backed it up with an incredible game against the All Blacks again in Dublin. And had the referee had any sort of a pair, we probably should have won that game. So we finished the Autumn Internationals really, really well. And then we went into the Six Nations and we had a slow start, which was partly due to Irish, but also largely due to good play by Scotland. Scotland slowed down Irish ruck ball just long enough for the referee to have a look, and then they take a hand away, and that slowed down our, as many times CJ was coming around the corner, or Jamie or Sean, our big runners coming around the corner, had to stall and had to restart their run, and it made it very, very easy for us to defend. We weren't narrow in the November Internationals, so there wasn't any issue with our defence in the November Internationals. Scotland played really, really good attacking rugby that caught Ireland on the bounce. They were not able to react and to slow down the Scottish game, Scottish ball. So not so much that we were narrow in defence. We ended up narrow. The reason we ended up narrow was because we weren't able to slow down the defence. Sean O'Brien wasn't able to get in, wasn't able to get on the ball. The back row was, we just weren't able to do to Scotland what they did to us in the first 20 minutes.
So, can I just say on that? So, it's not the same problem as the game against Argentina. It has the same outcome, but how we got there is different.
Again, you go back to the Argentina game. What happened in the Argentina game? We lost the five players we said we couldn't win. We couldn't win in a World Cup with in one game. So, we went into the Argentina game with all these players that we said we needed to play. And he used this, like I always use it, would New Zealand have won the World Cup had they lost those five exact players? Possibly, but you know, they would have been a lot harder. If you get quick ball, let's just use the example of Italy at the weekend. If you get quick ball without having to put a huge amount of players into the ruck to get that quick ball, rugby becomes quite easy and teams are on the back foot. Dave Hollowell, when he came over to Leinster for a second thing, I handed him a playbook and he was just like, oh my God, look at all this. He just went, rugby is simple. If you get over the main line with quick balls, defences are on the back foot. They're either going to be pinged for offside, but they're going to have to go back. And while they're going backwards, you're going forward. That's a really, really hard situation to be in. So, and you end up going back to the ruck and you end up having your spacings all over the place and everybody's trying to make decisions, but you're always doing it on the back foot. And it looks really, really awkward and really, really hard and we look really, really narrow. But if you're wider, if you're recessed, they just come through you. So you try and defend the middle and then hope you can wedge, sorry, not wedge, but you can, that's the terminology for it, but you would try to drift them out into the touchline. But players are so fast now, if you show them the edge, they take the edge.
It kind of tallies with what Andy Farrell was saying after the Scotland game. He was like, there's no problems with my systems. This was an attitude issue. We were off in that first 40-45 minutes.
The great thing about having the face for radio, when you do match commentary, you are up in the gantry and you have the bird's eye view and you see everything as it's happening. You see the players who are thinking three or four phases ahead and they're drifting out somewhere and miraculously the ball gets it. I was watching clips of Haranordiki during the week and just watching why he was on the wing, and he was just drifting out there because he kind of felt this is where the ball would end up, very much like Anthony Foley. It's amazing how many tries he scored in the wing, you know, and the amount of tries that he scored couldn't be through coincidence. Scotland just were able to play with the ball, but when they slowed down the Irish ball, I look at Josh Stroud, particularly him, I looked at him and he'd go into the tackle and he would roll and he would lie for, you know, a millisecond, half a second, but enough for Conor Murray have to dig the second time. And when Conor Murray had to dig the second time, players had taken their timing off his first dig. And then when it didn't come up, they stopped and then they had to go again, but they'd lost all their momentum going into it. And Scotland then just thrived on it. And the ref, you know, is it illegal? Absolutely. But is it refed? No. So it's not illegal. So the ref didn't blow the whistle, so you kind of have to go, well, listen, take your hat off to the Scottish and kind of go to the Irish. Maybe the next time that happens, somebody drops, well, the old days, you just send Trevor Brennan into him and nobody would ever be on the run. Nobody was giving a hand in any of that stuff.
Yeah, I'd wonder what you do now.
Well, what do? You kind of have to, you could see Jamie was getting animated, Rory's getting animated, but, you know, and this is the hard thing, like you having to go to the referee and say, no, it's amazing if you don't stop him doing that, where's going to be some back? And then the ref kind of goes, you know, maybe they let you away, but maybe they don't. You know, it's one of those really unanswerable questions. It's a bit of sportsmanship. You've played the ref better on the day, and sometimes you just have to wear it. And that's what I love about sports, because on the next day, that same ref may penalise everything that, you know, that he doesn't like the look of.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it was very frustrating to be at the... I had the opposite view of Darcy, and that's in the Murrayfield press box is very close to ground level. So you had a great view of the gain line. And you could see that Ireland were playing a bit deeper as well, both in defence and attack. They weren't coming off the line as quickly as the Scots were as well. But it was very frustrating. At one point, the penalty count was 9-2 in Ireland's favour. And there were a lot of other times when Romain Poit was playing advantage with his arm sticking out as Scotland conceded yet another penalty to break down in the 22 and never even a warning of a yellow card. So Nigel Owens' role this Saturday is obviously crucial. And I think Nigel Owens, by and large, is a good appointment for Ireland. We are familiar with him. We trust in him. He spends a lot of time refereeing in Ireland. I think that familiarity will bring a degree of comfort and respect for him that maybe the French could become frustrated with. If there's a weakness in this French team, it is that if you take them through an interminable number of phases, they will lose their defensive discipline and they will more likely concede a penalty than Ireland will. They're just more likely to be one person to break down the defensive system and just go for it on his own and hang over the ball too long or whatever, and they will concede penalties, I think, in a way that Ireland won't do. And I think by and large Nigel Owens' appointment tilts the balance in favour of Ireland as well.
There's also a thing as well when you think about from the Scotland game, so we have such high expectations coming out of the November international.
Mm-hmm.
Scotland, I firmly believe that the Italy game was more important than the Scotland game. So win or lose, and I always said this championship can still be won with a loss. The Scottish game, I don't think we gave Scotland as much credit as they deserved. They mm-hmm. played really well, but Ireland got a bonus point out of that. An upward trend is very, very rarely linear. You rarely do you go straight up. 2016, while a poor Six Nations, was a phenomenal year outside of that. Like a phenomenal, unprecedented in Irish history, setting records across the board. To be able to continue in that upward trend would have been incredible. Would have been an even bigger feat almost than 2016. So to come back from that loss against Scotland could be really, really important. Could be a really, really watershed moment. So the Italy game then, for me, it was really, enjoying being on this side of it, because I could look at it and go, okay, well now you're at an infliction point. You're deciding, you're battling for, are you going to continue downward? If we had just beaten Italy by 10 or 15 points, and played poorly, you're almost establishing a downward trend, and then going into the French game going, oh, Ireland aren't really playing well. But they played really well. They beat what was in the front of them and they beat them really well. They scored tries the last 15 minutes when teams normally come off the gas. They re-established that upward trend. So for me, the positivity going into that into the French game is really good. And the French are trying to undo almost a decade of malaise, and now it's, you know, where there's flashes of it, but can Ireland take, as you're talking about, can they take them through those large phases of play where they are out on their feet? They have their front five are all over 110, 115, some of them 125, nearly 130 kilos. They are a weak point, but you have to be able to, you have to be prepared to go through, as you said, long phases, keeping the ball in play for 3 minutes, and it's tough, but attacking is a hell of a lot easier than defending for 3 minutes.
And no team is better equipped in this tournament to do that to France than this Irish team, if they're on the mettle.
It sounds like you're both leaning towards an Irish victory at this point.
Yeah,
I've completely given up on predictions. I like Ireland, and I think the home advantage, the benefit, the home advantage definitely works in this tournament. It's about, it edges up to about 58-60% for the home nation. Now that does take into advantage that Scotland have never really won many games, but even with that bias in there, it does work for the home nations. I think Joe has. With the way we played, I think it's been very much finding our feet, get back in. I think there's players in there who will be under pressure to perform. And I think time and time again, Joe gets the best out of these players. So I like Ireland. Who wins? Gary?
Yeah, I think so. I would say reservedly, I'm a bit surprised by the apparent confidence that Ireland are going to do a number in France, that, you know, the trend of history has completely turned in Ireland's favour. In the last six nations, there's been 6-1 score games. Two Irish wins, two draws, two French wins, something like that. Do you know what I mean? When Ireland do win, it's usually a one score game. The World Cup was a little bit different. But France were at a much lower ebb under Philippe Saint-André than they are now under Guy Novais, who's not really the coach Yannick Brew is, but Novais is a brilliant motivator. But I just do think that 5 o'clock kickoff, Ireland's first game in the Aviva Stadium in the Six Nations, where the feel good factor was so strong in November. Ireland haven't lost in 3 years under Joe Schmidt in the Six Nations at the Aviva Stadium. France haven't won in 5 years away from home, apart from two wins in Italy and one in Scotland. They're just not good on their travel yet. And this is a team only starting out still and all under the Novais, Yannick Brew regime, whereas Ireland are much further down the road with an even more settled team and combinations than France. And I think that will tell, maybe not until the last 20 minutes, but I think it will tell.
Okay. Gordon, it is 10 years since the Ireland-France game at Croke Park, a game in which you did play. Not a game I suspect anybody has particularly happy memories of. I mean, it's obviously a monumental, historic moment for Irish sport, but also kind of heartbreaking.
Yes. You know, you look back at it and you know what went wrong, and you look at it and you kind of go, oh, it was a shame. But I kind of have kind of almost a split memory on the day, because on one hand, yeah, we lost the Six Nations match, but then on the other hand, I'm also a kid from Wexford who played hurling for his whole life up until he picked up rugby ball at 12 years of age. So the impact of playing on Croke Park as a rugby player was not lost on me on that day. So while, yeah, the result wasn't what we wanted, there was a certain part of me was sitting there going, I'm on Croke Park and I'm going to be one of this group of players who is the first, and, you know, was the first group of players to play on Croke Park in a foreign sport and rugby, and you know, that was really important. Unfortunately, we all fell prey to the one thing we would walk into a school and tell kids who are, you know, when you're an ex-coach says you come down and coach the kids and for their final and say, don't play the occasion, play the game like it's any other game. But unfortunately, the seasoned professionals, it overcame us, and that's, you know, and that's unfortunate, and that's life, but it was a brilliant memory to have, but it did get us ready for the next one, which wasn't the worst match in the world to be involved
yeah,
in.
No, I was going to say, because it sounds like you kind of, it definitely felt like you were playing the occasion against England as well, and in that case it was like over our dead bodies.
Yeah, but the lesson was learned from the French game. You know, you can't buy experience, but you can learn from it. So we had the experience of the French game. We had that national anthem and how important that was, and never as important on that day in the French game. It then became much more important on the on the game against England. But I think the enormity of what we were doing was reinforced in the second game. I think there was a certain amount of national pride, and again, you look at everybody and the people who were in the Irish team, they knew what it meant, and there was a personal motivation in there as well, and there was something about history and legacy and all those little bits and pieces that something needed to be done specifically here, something needed to be done well. And I remember just even the week, and it was a really calm week because very little had to be done. It was I just remember in the dressing room, and it was all, again, relaxed. Everybody was thing, and then just Paul spoke, and Brian spoke, and Paul spoke again, and then it was just like, okay, enough, we're good. Everybody was on that. When you talk about that that flow, or when players are in that peak performance state, you know, you look around the room, and it was just like, this is a very special place to be.
Gordon, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Great, my pleasure.
Great memories there from 10 years ago. I can't believe it's 10 years.
Yeah.
You were the first person to tell us all who Pat Lam's successor is going to be. Good job.
Thank you.
Who is he? Tell us about him.
Kieran Keane. He's very interesting. He's been on the coaching treadmill for a long time, kind of low-key jobs. His major breakthrough came when he took over Tasman in 2009. They were recently formed out of Marlborough and Nelson Bay when they expanded the NPC into the new ITM Cup and ITM Championship. They started in the Championship, which is the lower tier, the second division in effect. For the first 3 years, they really struggled. I think they finished bottom of the heap 1 year. There was rumours that they were going to go out of existence, that they'd no money. Where does it sound familiar?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they tore up the script, himself and Lee McDonald, the other coaches, brought in a lot of new players, came up with a very new high-risk brand of running, attacking, creative, offloading rugby. A couple of years later, the results didn't improve drastically, but the fans liked what they were watching. 3 years later, they won. They got to the Championship final and won it. The following year, they got to the ITM Cup final. The following year, they got to third in the ITM top flight. Remarkable story, rags to riches in his 7 years there. And then he became the attack coach for Waikato Chiefs last season. And they certainly know how to attack. And he's there again this season. So he looks like he's about 63 or thereabouts. He claims that coaching has helped him mellow. He was quite gruff and to the point with his players and with everybody else around him. But he says that he owes coaching a lot because it's taught him to be a better human being. I think it's a very interesting left field appointment. He was the man apparently they were after all along. All right. The other names that were linked were not on their radar, were not interviewed, were not approached. This is the guy they wanted. And I think for Connacht, they have to think a little bit outside the box. They have to do it differently. They can't beat Munster playing Munster rugby or Leinster playing Leinster. They have to be a little bit different. And it's great that Connacht, for so long, were synonymous with tuck it up the jumper, mauling, rugged, straight up one-up runners, take your goal kicks, so forth, are now becoming synonymous with being some very expansive, playing with rugby with flair, and will be a place to go for Irish players from around the country.
That's their brand, all right. Last question just on this. Do you know whose backroom team is going to be? Is
that no, but there will be one or two very interesting appointments. I'm told that there will be other new coaches coming in, and I'm told that Jimmy Duffy will be staying on as the forwards coach, which would be popularly received within months of the forwards as well. And I'm also told that Pat Lam, Bundiaki and the Kiwis, with the knowledgeable Kiwis within the setup, and there's always a good few Kiwis in Connacht, that they rate this guy very highly and they're very happy with the appointment.
All right, great stuff, Jerry. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Gordon Darcy wanted us just to mention that before the Ireland-England game on Friday night, that's Friday the 17th of March in the RDS, it's the Ireland Legends against the England Legends. This time though, the Ireland Legends are going to have a bunch of players like Gordon Darcy, who could probably still do a job. Mick Galway, Alan Quinlan, Shane Byrne and Ronan O'Gara also playing the England Legends, include Mike Tindall, Lewis Moody, Jason Leonard, Mark Quaido and Ian Balshaw. Come and join the Rugby Legends. They're all going to be remembering Anthony Foley on the night. That's Friday the 17th of March at the RDS.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to appliancesdelivered.ie. Call full time on your old appliance and get a result on a new one at the lowest price guaranteed. Appliancesdelivered.ie.